These words of William Henry Channing were written probably in 1840. He was a Unitarian minister and a Transcendentalist. The Transcendentalists were the people who, many of them Unitarians, were hoping to pull people away from the rigidity of the church at that time and into a more open and expressive spiritual life. To live content with small means, to seek elegance rather than luxury, and refinement rather than fashion. To be worthy, not respectable, and wealthy, not rich. To study hard, think quietly, talk gently, act frankly. To listen to stars, birds, babes, and sages with open heart. To bear all cheerfully, do all bravely. Await occasions. Hurry never. In a word, to let the spiritual, unbidden and unconscious, grow up through the common. This is to be my symphony. Many people who study the mind, from neurologists to psychologists to social scientists, concur that the vast majority of what is going on in our minds at any given moment is not at all conscious. And people call this other activity that is most of what is going on in our brains all the time a variety of things: the unconscious, the pre-conscious, the subconscious. And some of you make your living helping us work with this being, this entity within us that is our inner ocean, tidal, capable of Caribbean calm and North Atlantic fury, full of leviathans and delicate coral reefs. In our culture, we are mostly embarrassed that we have all this stuff in our subconscious, our pre-conscious, our unconscious, because we are embarrassed by it. We mostly ignore it and try to pretend that 90 or so percent of our mind is just not happening. And one of the reasons that we're embarrassed about it is that the contents of it leak out periodically, which is, of course, embarrassing. And when that happens, we try to sweep it up as quickly as possible and then get on with the stated agenda for the day, pretend that that did not happen, which, of course, means that we ignore it more. Meanwhile, the swells in the ocean are rising. The glow in the dark waves from the phytoplankton are breaking on the sandy shores. The squid are grabbing fish. With all of that going on, it is stunning that any of us ever remember where our keys are. And of course, the busier we are, the more stuff we have to manage in our lives, the more we don't have time or attention to notice what our inner aquatic world is up to. Busyness and stuffiness are extremely effective distractions from this inner world, this inner world where, in fact, most of our life is happening without us noticing it. I have become more and more aware of how much this other part, this majority part of my mind, is what's really happening in my life. My husband and I have a story that we retell whenever we have these moments when we realize, oh, the part we're not noticing is the part that's actually running the show. Because I like to think of myself as a pretty self-aware person. And when I have these gaps, we talk about this. When John and I were first dating, somehow the question of favorite colors came up, which isn't the deepest getting to know you question, but it's what we had. So we were at my home during this conversation, and apparently I had said that I didn't know what my favorite color was, but maybe it was red. And John looked at me surprised and laughed and said, "No, it's not." And I said, "Well, how do you know that?" And he said, "Well, the room we're standing in is painted purple. The folded towels here are purple. In fact, all of your towels are purple. You are wearing a purple sweater, and it is one of several purple sweaters that you own. And really, the clincher is that your car is purple." I have determined that he was correct about what my actual favorite color was. So if I couldn't even track what my favorite color was, how often is our unconscious mind working away, dictating all kinds of purchases, from cars to towels to paint, without us even knowing that it's quietly running the show? So sometimes John will just say, "Purple." And it's good to have someone in your life who can point out to you, the other part is at work here, because so often it is. And some of the stuff that's swimming around in that primordial soup is the stuff I talked about last week. Racism and sexism and classism and, you can't say environmentalism, that doesn't come out right, anti-environmentalism. All of that stuff, just like our favorite colors, is in there swimming around, causing us to do and not do things without us ever noticing it. So we go around saying we think our favorite color is red. Meanwhile, we are painting the town purple. And it's hard to get those two things to come together. Have you seen any of these online studies in which you can take a little test online and they reveal to you your unconscious prejudices? I'll put a link on Facebook and on the website this week. They're very disturbing to take. They have them on a whole bunch of social issues and on some things like pets. So you can start with something, they don't have favorite color, but you can start with something a little less alarming and move into some of the important social issues of the day and find out what's actually happening in your inner ocean. And it doesn't mean that this is the whole story. It just means it's useful to know so that you can respond to what's happening inside and maybe make different choices outside. So I noticed this week also that last week in my sermon when I was talking about racism and I departed from my written text a few times, there were a few sentences in which I talked as if everyone in the room was white, which is not true. And I heard myself saying those sentences in those moments and thought, ah, this is how it happens. We engage conversations about racism, and those inner assumptions that we're not always aware of come out. And we talk as if, well, in my case, I talked as if everyone was the same as me, and, well, you're not, which is the beauty of encountering the world. So I apologize for those moments when I spoke as if the people of color in the room were not here. And try to keep noticing that. And the thing that I will do is, in addition to noticing that, I will not stop talking about race so that I will avoid the possibility of making that mistake again. Because that, of course, is how we try to put that subconscious part away. Oh, I make a mistake over here, so I just won't go there. And if I make a mistake over here, I won't go there either. And then the range of what we can talk about, the range of the places we make contact gets smaller and smaller. And we miss some of those tender moments that you described in your Christmas stories. So why am I talking about the unconscious when I am supposed to be talking about simplicity? Because in addition to these mistakes about favorite colors and how we talk about race in our culture, all of my best poetry has come from this nonverbal, pre-conscious part of my mind. Indeed, I think all of my writing that's any good comes from this part of me that mostly is something I'm not aware of. I think most of my inspirations and my great kindness come from this ocean within. And I wouldn't have any of it if I didn't sit still, often in the middle of the night now, when the world is quiet, and listen for that other world. And that's the simplicity that makes a full life possible. To quote travel writer and stillness advocate Pico Iyer, it's in the stillness that we prepare ourselves for dealing with the realities of life, which are often very difficult ones. He goes on to describe what his friends do to find stillness, quiet, and simplicity. Other friends try to go on long walks every Sunday, or they forget their cell phones at home. A series of tests in recent years has shown that after spending time in quiet rural settings, subjects exhibit greater attentiveness, stronger memory, generally improved cognition. Their brains become both calmer and sharper. More than that, empathy, as well as deep thought, depends on neural processes that are inherently slow. The very things that our high-speed lives have little time for. I remember reading years ago about a culture that devoted a few hours of each day to the dream life of the night before. When they woke in the morning, if they had dreamed about someone, they would go and talk with that person. And if there had been anger in the dream, either on their side or the other person's side in the dream, they would talk about what that anger had been and how they needed to work it out. Which sounds a little funny to us because you think, well, it was just a dream. But I think they had a relationship with this unconscious part of their minds that led them to think that it's just as real and just as important as the plans that we make and the things that we say we're going to do any given day. So they spent the first part of their day sorting out their unconscious minds, figuring out what it was that had been tossed up on the beach of their thinking. And by sharing all of that stuff from the underwater world, they were always weaving themselves back into relationship with each other. They were putting their connections with each other before whatever needed to get done. And some of you are sort of shaking your heads and thinking, whew, that's not going to happen. And probably not this week. But for this moment, what would it be like? What would it be like to be able to start our days tending with each other, whatever it was that had bubbled up from the inner oceans? Whether it was some realization about something we had said that wasn't what we meant to say, or some new understanding of ourselves, or some anger we didn't know was there but needs to get sorted through. What if that came first? How would our whole way of living change? And you wouldn't necessarily have to figure out exactly what it meant. It might be as simple as just having time to notice it, and notice with each other. Notice that your mind is much more than you give it credit for most of the time. So this month, when things tend to get more and more and more and more hectic, what is some little thing that you can do to resist the distraction from what is most essential? I see some people taking Facebook fasts this month, which is to say, they say, I'll see you in January. And I'm hearing about some people saying that they'll have a very limited amount of time on their computers, or that they won't, in fact, go to any of those holiday parties. Even though they're often fun, they need the time to sit and be still. And, of course, some of you think, well, I don't want to miss the party. Well, go, of course. Enjoy. And maybe make a little extra time to listen, to really listen to what the people there are saying to you. Your mind knows what is good for your life. Listen to it.